If Didier Deschamps were to leave and Zinedine Zidane were available and he was not picked by the French Federation, the headquarters of the French Federation would have to look at what happened at the Bastille.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Keith Wood is with us this morning. Keith, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm in great form, thank you. Though I do think there needs to be a new segment on the show for Kenny Cunningham and his emoji conversation. I've never heard a guy be so awkward in his life. It's quite entertaining. I fit into that category.
How is your emoji game, Keith?
My emoji game is exactly zero. I think I'm accelerating in age at a ferocious rate. I've no interest whatsoever in it, and so I felt comfortable seeing how uncomfortable Kenny was with it, and the idea that you need your full team to publicly give you thumbs up or all that sort of stuff. Send a text, for God's sake, you know.
So how would you have dealt with did anybody ever come back into the dressing room and apologise in your time?
Yes, of course. We did loads of things wrong. You're better off to apologise pretty quickly, I think. Try and get it over with as soon as you can. But there is a bit of gnashing of teeth when you make a mistake, and some guys do it. Look, we've had it on this show of Ronan O'Gara saying he cost us a European final, and that's his view on it. Our view is we should have scored another three or four tries and it should have been a moot point. But you know, guys get upset because they take things personally, because you put on a jersey, you have to deliver for the jersey. When you don't do it, which we've all made a hames of it at different times, I think an apology is probably right, but you have to get over it very quickly because you have to turn up the next week. That's the reality. And actually, if you hide behind the fact that you've made a mistake, you've never any chance of getting over it. You know, that's one of the big elements that becomes very important for a sportsman.
Okay, let's move on to some of the stuff that's very newsy. In all the papers this morning, Stephen Larkin's comments about, he was asked about whether or not he wanted a new deal, and he was like, yeah, of course, there's no hesitation is how it's being framed, and he said, we all do. And so he's essentially doubling down on the existing coaching tickets, and there seems to be a general sense of relief that Larkin will still be involved because he's been linked with moves back down under, and it looked like at the weekend there were some clear signs of his influence on it. But it's a bit early for them to be doubling down on the head coaching ticket at the moment, given that this is such a pivotal season. And do you sign him up now and make sure that it's not a question for the rest of the year, or do you kind of say, well, look, let's wait until Christmas and see how it goes? What would you do if you were in charge at the moment?
Yeah, I think these are interesting. I'm sitting on the fence on this only for the reason that the coaching ticket are Johan van Graan's been in for quite a period of time. There has been a huge amount of change, and there's been a huge amount of problems that have been caused by COVID. So things are delayed a little bit. And I think it does require a high level of performance between here and Christmas. And you know the conversations will happen in the background, but you also know that we in the media and every other media outlet would ask them that question all the time, because none of them will want to answer it immediately. And it's fine asking it the first week, but you know it's going to be asked for the next 10 weeks until such time as a decision is made or whatever, whenever it's made. But I do think you need to see Munster make more of a progression in terms of style, in terms of getting the most out of its younger guys that are coming through the system. And I think that becomes a period of time that the powers that be in Munster and the IRFU, because it's both, it isn't just Munster that make these decisions, and how they pull together their thoughts over who they would want. I mean, I want to see more of Stephen Larkin, because I think he's beginning to ease his way into a serious coaching role. And I think that that's something that's very important. But I think it's incredibly important for them, and a huge amount of pressure for them for the next 2 or 3 months, because the decisions have to be made, because prior 6 months prior to the end of a contract, those coaches are entitled to go and be on the open market to go and look for a new job. So the powers that be have to pull that information together, A, to decide that they want to keep them, B, that they decide that they don't and still want to get the most out of them for the last period of time. It is the most vulnerable part of every single coach or player's career, actually, is that particular, this particular 3 or 4 months. But look, all Munster want is to win. They want trophies. They want the opportunity to have trophies. They got into a final last year. And I think if they got into the final last year and played at their absolute best and lost, I don't think we'd be having this conversation. I think this conversation is happening because in the big games against Leinster last year in particular, Munster just didn't quite get themselves up to a gallop, and they were just beaten by another team managing their way around the field, taking an opportunity when they did, and Munster didn't show anything other than take the ball up short or kick it. And I don't know that, I think everybody is sick of that as a style. So I think Munster need to show more in this next period of time for the coaching tickets to get the support.
Yeah, I totally understand that. The one thing, just to kind of bring this out to an even bigger level of the politics involved, is obviously it's a significant moment for the IRFU in that at central level there will be a new chief executive sooner rather than later, and there will, one of the first decisions that chief executive is going to have to make is whether or not David Nusafora gets a new deal, unless Nusafora preempts that by not taking a new deal. So we could have a scenario where we have a new coaching ticket at Munster, a new Grand Poobah in charge of the rugby side of things, and a new CEO as well, which would be a lot of change. And you've got a relatively recent new CEO in Munster, which probably I would say actually is in the current coaching ticket's favour. That there's a lot of moving parts over here, and does anybody want everything to be moving, or do we make small changes? So it's hard to know whether or not the macro will affect the micro.
Well, I think having a lot of moving parts can be a plus or be a minus. I still have a little bit of a bee in my bonnet over the end of the last World Cup. It was almost a self-review for David Nusafora and his role within Irish rugby. And I think that there has to be a higher level of independent scrutiny. It actually goes to something that Anna Kaplis said when she was on, and my God, did she speak well. She's got a future in broadcasting if she likes it. She's very strong, a confident voice. But it's the idea of what goes wrong. Well, until you get to the bottom of what goes wrong, it becomes incredibly hard to fix it. And if you're on the inside, you can say, this is what's wrong, wrong, wrong. But you need a different perspective from the outside. Now, I don't know who that perspective is, but it needs to have a balanced perspective as to what's happening. So there's been changes that have happened in Munster. The Munster needed to become far more commercial. It has. It also needs to become far more, I think, youth-oriented. And we've seen that now. We've seen that partly by design and partly because of COVID. But we'll take the benefit of both, if that's the right thing to say, in these very difficult times. But there's nothing wrong with change, because what we're trying to say is we want all our Irish teams and the Irish team to be at the top table all the time. So do we continue not making a change because it might upset not full success? I don't know if that's the right thing to say. I think if you make changes to try and have the best system in place, that's not to say that any of the guys aren't doing their job, but we want them doing their job at a higher standard, because that's the demand of all the supporters and the fans. Of course, not everybody can win all the time, but it's been a long time, we'd say, since Munster had a jersey, had a trophy.
Yeah.
So they want to make changes at that stage because they want to be back at that table. So there's a lot of pressure for people that goes in. I remember having a conversation 3 or 4 years ago when we had, it was an argument I was having with Gerry Thornley on this program. And it was over the fact that people mightn't think that Munster is a great place to go to. You ask any burgeoning budding coach, what it is that he wants to do. He wants to play at a team with a history and a team that is maybe underutilized and has an opportunity to go and achieve something. Munster is a very big ticket. So we need to try and get that understanding, knowing that there's financial constraints on everything, but that doesn't stop change. I don't think you should stop it for the fact that you may need to change two or three or four people, or there may be different new people coming into it.
So maybe the time is right for change, fundamental change in Irish rugby. There's a new chief executive coming in to set the tone. It might be the time for David Nussafour to say, OK, you two contracts, that was great, thanks very much for your work, and we're going to go a different direction.
Yeah, well, look, it's funny because I've never spoken to David Nussafour about his role in Irish rugby. And I can see from the outside that I would look and say, yeah, he's done some really, really good things, like some of the things he's done. I would disagree with other things that he's done. I do believe in the idea that you're much better off with a province being stocked with players from that province if you can manage it. In the short term, it can be great to have people from other provinces, but you don't ever want to lose your identity. And I think that's something that we have to be very careful about. But I don't think there's anything wrong with change for the sake of it. Sometimes you have to risk things to go a bit higher. I was just thinking back, reflecting for a period of time over the last summer, was that rugby got sick of the manner in which the Lions and South Africa played. Now, South Africa always played that way, and we know that they played that way. But the Lions didn't have to play that way, and they did. And we've subsequently seen that both New Zealand and Australia have beaten South Africa playing in their own way. And maybe that's something that we need to try and think of as well, that there are styles of play that suit certain teams, but there are other styles that don't. And I think we need to have a little look at what style might suit us in the future.
And that obviously comes from the top down.
Both, I think. It's very interesting listening to Anna talking about the reasons why things didn't happen. And for me, I felt because of COVID that there was a lack of depth of confidence in the team. And when they got a knockback, they got a big knockback. I remember that happened in the men's team in 2007, where they suddenly didn't perform as well against lesser teams, and they just lost a little bit of sense of confidence in themselves. That can happen, you know, but I don't know. A bit of change is no harm whatsoever, yeah. But you want to make certain that you keep everybody that is doing something well, and they can be part of a process. So that's why I'm saying for Munster, next 3 months becomes incredibly important, because I think everybody wants to see that there is that potential for change, that potential for being able to play at a different level and a higher level. Because in truth, the Munster's way of playing for the last number of years, and I would say Ireland for the last couple of years, which is huge amount based around one-out carriers and kicking the ball to get it back, that is a style that seems to have gone by the wayside this summer. So are those teams able to make that progression? So that's a really interesting pressure. You know, the game changes every couple of years. It's, are we going to be quick on the change?
Were you excited by what you saw last weekend, Keith?
Was I excited? I rarely get excited in the first couple of matches. You don't quite know. When we're looking at the South African teams that are up, that are shorn of their World Cup stars, and I know Ireland or the Irish teams were as well, you kind of have to take it. It's like a pre-season friendly. I know it's not a pre-season friendly, and I don't want to dish the new competition too early. Do you know what? I loved the score. I loved some of the play. There were mistakes, of course, which I wasn't going to get overly excited by either. I thought it was pragmatic. And I'd like to see us push that a little bit more. But I think, for me, I think Munster are trying to find their way. I don't think they're not quite there yet. And I don't think we'll see how good they are for a few weeks. I thought both Leinster and Munster just were, like, they know how to win in a lot of matches. But it's not these matches. It's the bigger matches. So how willing are they to push it a bit further? I know Leinster are much further down that track and much more comfortable with it. Munster need to get there pretty soon.
Like you mentioned there a couple of years ago, having the debate about Munster not being an attractive job. Surely it is. Surely it
it's
is
great
now.
Job. Like with- no, it's a, it was a great. It's a great job. It's a great job for any coach that can come in to get the most out of a group of players. It's one of it is one of the top jobs because they are, and it's funny because of the rivalry that happens between Leinster and Munster all the time, but Munster is a winning club. If you were to go to American football, they win a huge amount of their games in their season, but they want to be a championship club. You know, they want to have silverware at the end of it. And because that hasn't happened, that means it's a huge draw because the history of it is there. So, you know, they might have to break a few eggs to make that happen. But that's kind of the joy if you get people in. So I would say when we go back to the original question, and you look at Johan and Stephen and Graham, those guys coming in, like they've been there for a while, their contracts are going to be up. The change kind of has to happen, I think, in this period of time for them to get it. Or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. That's only my own point of view. I did note that during the summer, Ian Costello came over from the Wasps coaching group. And he was in Munster before. I remember Ian before, and he's now in as part of heading up the academy. That's a great change. You know, that's one of those great appointments that you have, which is someone who actually understands what it is and wants to build on that idea of Munster. And, you know, every time we have this conversation, I always want to blend. I want a blend of some of great quality from overseas, and I want a blend of great guys from internally. It's good to have a homegrown coach get his experience elsewhere and come back again.
Yeah, and again, it'd be great to feel like there's an overarching plan around that, and if that was communicated, and maybe that's the point that we'll get to over the next while. Very interesting season, a kind of a pivotal season for Irish rugby. Big opportunity, no excuses anymore for Munster in terms of the makeup of their squad and the investment that they've had. Leinster so close to glory in the last couple of seasons, but not quite there, and they haven't massively improved their squad in terms of huge investment. So it's going to be relying on the young players coming through. The existing players' level of health, you know, Dan Levy being back is a huge thing for them. We'll see a few others as well coming through that might be able to change the texture of how they play. But largely, it's going to be the same group of players. So with Ulster's great crop of kids, and Connacht have kind of been a bit screwed by the way the tournament has been set up in terms of we expect them to finish fourth in their conference pool, panel, pot, what's it called? What are the... There was an official name. Conference. Is it a conference? It's not a conference. There was a sexy marketing term that we were all told to call it last week that I've unfortunately forgotten. With that, and then the fact that there's massive change coming at the very top of Irish rugby, I don't remember as much being up for grabs in Irish rugby and the kind of the future being up for grabs as much as it is right now.
Yeah, do you know what? I think, you know, having played in that system for quite a long time, having watched it for longer now at this stage, I always think it's in that state of flux, you know. And look, we have had an incredibly steady hand in Philip Brown there. So Philip and I started in the IRFU at the same time, which is quite interesting.
Wow.
I went into the Ireland squad in 92. He went in as secretary of the old amateur organisation in 92. I sent him a text just congratulating him on lasting longer than me. But I mean, he was a very calm hand there for a long time. And lots of people kind of get frustrated with the calm hand because other things could have been done. But the IRFU were kept in a very good financial position and didn't make panic decisions at the start of professionalism, definitely under his steerage. So I think we're not in a very bad position under which to make gains. But again, it's about getting some of that structure right. And look, I go back to this, and we've had loads of these discussions in the past. This is wide ranging again, which of course seems like the start of something else. But our structure is built for amateur rugby. We then put and bolted on a professional provincial system and an international system on top of a 125-year amateur system. And I feel we're still not giving enough love to that amateur system, be that schools or clubs. But I do think that that's one of the legs of the stool. And I think we wobble because of it. And you'd love to see a big summit or a way of pulling together the conversations of the needs of the clubs in the country and a defined view of what they'd like that to be. Because if you ask any club, they feel as if they're out in limbo. And that makes it very tough. You don't want to have disenfranchised members within your system. And yet I don't know that that is properly structured. So I think if you're looking for change and flux, you should be getting the most out of the system. You should be understanding that there is an entire amateur system that needs an awful lot of support as well. And of course, the focus has to go to the professional because that's where all the money comes in.
Yeah.
But you need to get that balance right. I can't say that that's right.
Well, it's good inputs equals good outputs. It was very wide ranging. We didn't get too much into the nuts and bolts of the actual games themselves, but it's essentially the start of the season. So fingers crossed, there's plenty of good stuff for us to talk about, and it's not just all politics as the season goes. Keith, good stuff. Great to have you back.
Pleasure. Great to talk to you, lads.
If Didier Deschamps were to leave and Zinedine Zidane were available and he was not picked by the French Federation, the headquarters of the French Federation would have to look at what happened at the Bastille.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.